Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, December 19th, 2017. Government and rebel forces may be trying to angle for more territory as they move towards signing a ceasefire at the talks in Addis.
Dry season is an apartheid season, very fluid season for the armed groups to confront themselves. And that's why with this particular point, we call for the armed group that at least kindly, for the sake of the life of the citizens of South Sudan, from today, at least within the week, declares a state of hostility.
And at least one analyst says the warring parties want something different out of the high-level forum.
Rebel groups and most Western countries want the forum to be a new mediation. The goal is to, for them, is to create a new power-sharing arrangement, which significantly weakens the government's hand in favor of different opposition groups.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Stakeholders at the high-level forum are calling for an immediate end to hostilities by the warring parties. More than 100 members of various groups meeting in Addis Ababa agreed that a permanent ceasefire will create a favorable environment for tackling the issues that have hindered implementation of the 2015 peace deal. John Tanza reports for VOA from AU headquarters in Addis Ababa.
Members of the different armed and unarmed groups met this morning at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa to discuss a draft ceasefire agreement to be signed by all parties on Friday. Civil society groups at the forum are calling on the warring parties to silence the guns immediately. As talks get underway in earnest, clashes are being reported between government forces and rebels loyal to Riek Machar in Lasso, Kajukeji in Yei River State, and Lol State. Edmond Nyakani works for the Community Empowerment Network. He says the warring parties are preparing to gain some areas on the ground before signing a permanent ceasefire.
We are heading to dry season, and dry season is an apartheid season, very fluid season for the armed groups to confront themselves. And that's why with this particular point, we call for the armed group that at least kindly, for the sake of the life of the citizens of South Sudan, from today, at least within the week, declares a state of hostility.
Ismail Wallis is IGAD's special envoy for South Sudan. Wallis is facilitating the discussions on a draft ceasefire agreement to be signed by the warring parties on Friday at the end of the forum. The media is not allowed to attend the discussions. The widow of South Sudan's founding father, John Garang, gave an emotional speech at the official launch of the forum. Nyandeng urged participants to negotiate in good faith, saying, "Time has come for South Sudanese to make compromises and end fighting in their country."
The way forward is for this government in Juba to go, because there is nothing that they can deliver and they will never change. Dr. John used to say that the government in Khartoum is too deformed to be reformed. It is this government in Juba who is too deformed to be reformed.
Nyandeng, who was once a minister of roads and President Kiir's advisor on gender, had no kind words for the Kiir administration.
We want this government to be replaced by the government of technocrats. If you are afraid to say it, I'm saying it. It's because there's nothing they're delivering. 3 weeks ago, 100 people died. How many people do we need to die in order for us to see this government is not delivering?
South Sudanese gender activist Rita Lopidia says the fighting has especially taken its toll on women and girls. She says armed and unarmed opposition groups must do more to stop the killings.
The suffering of women and girls in the Republic of South Sudan and those in refugee camps has surpassed all levels of carnage. The massive displacement, the deteriorating economy, lack of protection, fear, insecurity, hunger, disease and poverty, the sexual violence committed with impunity must not be tolerated and condoned.
Civil society leaders at the talks are expressing fear. The government delegation is trying to lock civil society groups out of the ongoing discussions on a permanent ceasefire. The atmosphere at the talks is tense, with various warring parties holding side meetings to discuss specific parts of the ceasefire document, such as access to humanitarian agencies operating in South Sudan. Reliable sources told South Sudan in Focus that some individual senior government officials in the Juba delegation at the talks are objecting to the inclusion of access to humanitarian agencies in the discussion on ceasefire. Various South Sudanese stakeholders are expected to sign a ceasefire agreement on Friday. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa.
Participants at the forum are also discussing the more prickly issues of power sharing and security arrangements. VOA's Jill Craig talked to an analyst about some of the possible outcomes.
The forum is aimed at reviving the country's 2015 peace agreement, which fell apart in July 2016 after clashes between supporters of President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar led to widespread violence. International Crisis Group senior analyst Casey Copeland says power sharing and security arrangements will be the key objectives of the forum. She notes that East African bloc IGAD has made it clear that the forum is not a mediation or a new round of peace talks, although the parties all want something different.
Rebel groups and most Western countries want the forum to be a new mediation. The goal is to, for them, is to create a new power-sharing arrangement, which significantly weakens the government's hand in favor of different opposition groups. The government, on the other hand, is quite keen that the existing arrangements are only slightly modified and that they remain in the powerful position.
Copeland says IGAD is put in the middle, trying to balance these demands. South Sudan analyst Alan Boswell notes that the peace deal was signed between two parties, but since that time, the opposition has fragmented, making the task of the peace mediators even more challenging.
It's not just that all the opposition groups want to, you know, take power themselves. They actually have different positions, in as much as the SPLA-IO under Riek Machar has been primarily interested in sort of taking power through elections after the rebellion failed in Juba, whereas some of these other groups now are more interested in sort of forcing a restructuring of South Sudan and gaining more local autonomy sort of away from Juba.
Copeland argues that the forum is focused on conflict prevention as well as resolution. She highlights next year's election as an example.
If it's held next year, that simply none of the groundwork has been done for it, and we may see competition within the government or amongst groups that have made a peace agreement with the government over who's going to stand as candidates in different places. And so the election itself poses a set of conflict risks that don't exist right now.
Tens of thousands of people have been killed in South Sudan, and 2 million people have fled the country since conflict broke out in December 2013. The United Nations has warned that more than 1.2 million people in the country are one step away from famine. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudanese worldwide are monitoring the effort to bring peace to South Sudan. Emily Koti, who represents youth at the forum in Addis, fears leaders of the warring parties are not doing enough to silence the guns.
I felt, yes, what we have been listened to when we have made demands that let the international community, the IGAD, the Troika, and everybody else who is in this peace process ensure that the process is inclusive, that South Sudanese opinions are listened to. We are seeing that very clear that we've been listened to in the sense that some have come up reiterating the very things that citizens have been saying, that they want to see ceasefire, that they want to see an outcome that indeed embodies the aspirations of the people. I could see that in the hall. But I could also see from the applause by South Sudanese to the statements made by the different dignitaries that indeed a good number of us are tired. If indeed that applause was not just to please people, a good number of us are tired, and I'm awaiting to see in the proceedings of the forum this week to see that indeed that applause is going to be demonstrated in the conversations we are going to have and the interventions thereof.
Do you have faith in the delegates who have come here? Do you think they are going to sign an agreement and silence the guns in South Sudan?
At the beginning, I want to, I'm in this process with optimism, but every step of the way I'm going to be watching to see who wants to be an impediment to affording us the South Sudan we want. At the moment, it's not very clear who they are. Everybody seems to be expressing that they want to commit to this process. They are going to participate with a very good spirit. But until we embark on the real proceedings of the forum, it appears this week we are going to be deliberating so much on ceasefire. Until that happens, I also want to have an aspect of pessimism so that I can be able to be on the lookout for those who will want to derail this whole process and rob us of what we dearly need at this moment.
You sound very emotional. Why? I mean, it looks like your facial expression tells a lot.
I sound very emotional because as a young person, I've seen and I have witnessed generations and generations, those who are coming after me, being destroyed. And they are being destroyed by people who are a few. Unfortunately, I'm saying this without fear of contradiction, unfortunately, it's a number of a few men, about 5%, who have mismanaged us and squandered our future. And here we are. Today we are not even certain whether our resources are being managed well. We are hearing reports of our oil being mortgaged to pay off whosoever. We do not know. Those are very painful things. In a country where most children are not going to school, in a country where an 18-year-old girl stands up only to say that her graduation certificate is getting pregnant and having a child. That, all those things in my head, I could go on and on a list of them. They make one very emotional.
That's Emily Coty, a delegate representing South Sudanese youth at the High Level Forum. She spoke to my colleague John Tanza in Addis Ababa yesterday. A South Sudanese bishop at the forum says South Sudanese leaders should listen to the international community's call for an end to violence in the country. Bishop Enoch Tombe says the leaders of the warring groups should work hard to revive the collapsed peace deal. He tells John Tanza unless the country's leaders put their personal interests aside, the situation in South Sudan will only get worse.
Indeed, it's an opportunity for South Sudanese to listen to the message from the international community, including the IGAD countries, that it is our responsibility to solve our own problems, and they'll be ready to help us once we decide to work for peace and the war and allow humanitarian assistance to reach all the people of South Sudan. And in particular, create a new atmosphere of peace so that people can dialogue about the remaining issues of conflict, the issue of politics. What I understand now is that this is just the launching of the high-level revitalization forum for the peace agreement. It's just a beginning, but the objective is to stop the war, reach an agreement, and then allow humanitarian assistance to reach all the people. Maybe next year, early next year, January, then they will start discussing the hot issues. So I think I'm comfortable with the process. Of course, indeed, I open with a little prayer quoting Isaiah chapter 1, verses 15 to 18. Many people say, oh, this was talking about us. God will not listen to our prayers unless we stop the war and take care of the widows and orphans and work for justice and truth, and then dialogue, first with God and then one another. I hope this message will reach all the people. Really, we should end the war and move forward.
In 2015, 2014, you've been part of the faith-based groups at the negotiations, and you're quite familiar with the issues that were in the peace agreement that was not implemented. Do you have faith in the revitalization forum?
I think I want to say that the agreement itself, although people say it was imposed, I think the agreement had tried to address the root causes of the conflict. But I think what has not been clearly put down is the implementation. I think this last 4 years, it shows that people have not been able to implement because they have different understanding of the agreement. Maybe now it's time to discuss how do we implement the agreement with the support of the international community in terms of funding, in terms of experience, in terms of resolving difficult issues which we are left to be addressed at home. I think we have failed surely as South Sudanese, but I think we've got another chance to look at them again. in a much better way. You know, these political issues are not, some of the issues may take time to resolve, like system of government. You know, if you read the report of the consultation by IGAD, there are divergent views. People are calling for confederal system of government, others are calling for federal system, others saying it's a quo, others even don't know what, you know, because honestly, we are just a people who have not had a state of our own. So we don't know even what is a state, you know. We were just nations of different ethnic groups brought together by colonial powers, and now we found ourselves together. How do we now run this so-called state of South Sudan, which is in name, but in reality it's not? Somebody actually told me that we don't have a state. We have the people, we have the land, but we have yet to create a state. I think that's the challenge for us. And the internal community already will help us if we can go start step by step.
The church has been vocal about the issues in Juba, especially the suffering of the people, the displaced. If you're given an opportunity to speak to the leadership today, straight to President Kiir and the other leaders of the warring groups, what would you tell them?
Well, they should listen to the voice of the people, you know. You can only be a leader if you listen to your people and also listen to the advice of other leaders in the region. So our problem is that we are not listening to each other. And leadership is judged by how much you take the interest of the people of the country before your own interest. I think the message here has been that please put the interest of the people and the nation above your personal, political, ethnic, and other differences, other interests. That is the message, and this is what we need to listen to.
That's Anglican Bishop Inuk Tombe. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Addis yesterday. At least two civilians were killed and at least six aid workers abducted after an attack in Lowell State on Sunday. Solidarity International is demanding the unconditional release of three of its staff members. A deputy spokesman for the SPLA-IO confirms rebel forces are holding aid workers. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
At least six aid workers are said to be missing in Lowell State following an attack by rebel forces loyal to Riek Machar on a convoy traveling from Wau to Raja last week. Alexander Grout, chief executive officer of Solidarity International, says one driver and two other staff members of his organization are still missing. SPLA-IO deputy military spokesman Colonel Lampaul Gabriel claims his forces are holding four aid workers. Gabriel says his forces ambushed a convoy traveling from Wau to Raja, claiming the convoy was transporting ammunition belonging to a government militia leader called Abderrahman Abrab.
We ambushed that convoy, and it was heavy one. We destroyed two vehicles and killed a number of them, almost 35. And injured several. In the process, there were some civilians seen and they were running in disarray. So we collected those civilians, including a white man. So they are with us at the moment.
Gabriel claims his forces took the aid workers to protect them from being harmed during the clashes.
We are waiting for any third party organization that is neutral to come. We will hand them over without any condition, without they're just there for their safety. We can't hand them to the government, that will not work. But we'll hand them to a third party organization. Maybe ICRC can come and contact us. We'll give them back their people.
Lowell State Governor Rizik Zakaria says the rebels attacked commercial vehicles traveling from Wau to Raja, but denied it was an attack on a militia convoy. He says five civilians were killed and four vehicles were destroyed. Zakaria says the rebels also took a number of hostages working for two different organizations.
The rebels, the attackers, the assailants, they took these personnel as hostages, them, the seven of them, three from HealthNet and four from Solidarity International.
SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwang denies Gabriel's claims and says there was no fighting between government and rebel forces during Sunday's attack on the convoy. He claims the rebels took 10 people hostage after the attack.
10 people were abducted, including members of the staff of Solidarity International, and primary reports have indicated that one of them was a white person whose nationality is yet to be established. So the rebels, loyal to Riek Machar, had abducted 10 10 people and killed 3.
The UN Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan, Alan Dow, released a statement expressing concerns over the whereabouts of the missing 8 workers. Nadal says 6-8 workers, including one international staff who were traveling from Raja to Wau on a mission of implementing projects on food security and health, are still missing. He is calling for swift and safe release of all the 8 workers. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Is it safe to breastfeed if you are HIV positive? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite traditional song? Can you sing part of it?
I took it from the song of Kimo Makem Malangol. Twing may at the chen madan of your korum. You know, I like enjoying this song because it has really touches my heart and it unites 6 counties of Twiji State currently.
I love Embozi Zamalua, Bebe Cool. Gunyuma manange gunyuma Embozi Zamalua, like that. It's just a dance song. It's not really education or motivation. I just love to dance to the tune.
In Kanye World, Gold Coast, now in there, you were Ghana. This song is just how you appreciate someone who have done something good.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we're talking about HIV-positive women and breastfeeding. HIV-positive women in Kapeta State are telling mothers how to prevent the transmission of the deadly virus to their children. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Over the past 2 months, medical staff at the Kapuita Mission Hospital tested 12 babies whose mothers have undergone retroviral treatment for the last 18 months. Only one baby tested positive for HIV. They say that is because the HIV-positive mothers delivered their babies at a hospital with the help of a midwife and did not breastfeed their babies. Flora, one of the mothers taking retroviral drugs for HIV at the hospital, is relieved that her baby tested negative.
My baby was born in 2016. They tested her in this year when she was HIV negative. She's now at home. She's well doing. She's not getting sick. She's eating well. She's doing well.
Flora encourages all HIV-positive women who are pregnant to deliver their babies in the hospital with the help of midwife.
We are really very happy. We don't want any other child to die of HIV. We want all children to be free from HIV.
Breastfeeding when living with HIV is only recommended for some mothers. AVAT, a UK-based organization that has been working on HIV education for the past 3 decades, says breast milk contains HIV, which can be passed on to the baby. Only if the mother is on HIV treatment is she encouraged to breastfeed, and she is advised to breastfeed exclusively to reduce the risk of HIV transmission. Thanks to a local group called the National Empowerment of Positive Women United, established in 2013 to prevent mother-to-child transmission of HIV or AIDS. Many women in Kapuita receive antiretroviral drugs. The group meets with HIV-positive mothers to encourage mothers to seek regular medication and deliver in the hospital. Jane is a mentor mother with a women's group. Jane says it has not been easy convincing mothers who seem to have lost hope because of the stigma and discrimination that comes with being HIV positive.
Those mothers who we are trying to talk to them, politely counseling them until they come to accept. When they accept, we refer them to the hospital, then they get more information from the hospital. Now we are happy because they deliver negative children.
David Kane, medical superintendent at Kapuita Mission Hospital, says the staff was overjoyed to hear the results of the test.
When we received the result, it turned out that 11 was negative and 1
was positive. In fact, it was a joyous massacre because the effort that we were putting before, it was actually a positive effort and it yielded what we want. To some extent also, we are not happy for that child who is unlucky, the one child.
Dr. Kane says with early intervention among pregnant mothers, that goal is achievable.
This one's through antenatal, where she usually comes and attend regular antenatal and all this thing regularly, every month. Okay, this is a special case. Every month we need to see the mother, okay? And we need to make sure also the mother is taking ARVs, okay? ARVs regularly and with the septin. And during the delivery also, we need to make sure that the mother is on her drug. And one of the measures after delivering the child, we need to start the child on nevirapine. And also, we advise the mother, if she can comply with us, actually, we need to stop breastfeeding.
616 patients have been enrolled in the hospital's HIV treatment program. According to Dr. Kane, he says, unfortunately, only about half of them keep up with their regular medication. Dr. Kane says when the hospital closed down temporarily last year due to a lack of funding, many HIV and TB patients died because they did not have access to ARVs or TB drugs. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Je m'appelle Sultan Clinton. Je suis de l'Afrique, l'international.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Coco by Sultan Clinton.
Sibana, Sibana, Coco, 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 but the Purjana Academy should mayo, the Academy should meleki, Karanta Mohababes, it was a little bit of a chance.
Move your legs, move your legs.
I didn't see you dance and get a simple water play, like you only some other Sibana.
I'm going to go to the house. Famille and Duro Congo John Tanza
Mohabare Madero Galba Surubegua
Sibana Sibana
Mohabare Madero Galba Surubegua
Sibana Madero
I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be with us. We've been listening to Sultan Clinton with the song Coco. Do you have a comment for our show? Well, let us know. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or check us out on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Amen.